on this Saturday night. Russia connection? A new report says Attorney General Jeff Sessions discussed campaign issues with Russia's ambassador during the presidential campaign, contradicting Sessions' public testimony. The heated reaction from President Trump. Scorched earth. The devastating losses in California as residents return to find their homes in ruins after the worst wildfire of the year. Desperate days. The growing anger and deadly protests in Venezuela as the government tries to expand its power and crack down on dissent. Opioid court, a new approach in battling the epidemic, sending drug users immediately to treatment instead of jail. And sweet success, how one young man is building a satisfying life and business by jamming his way to success. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. A new report out today citing intelligence intercepts points to what could be an explosive revelation about Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Washington Post, citing unnamed sources, says U.S. intelligence agencies intercepted communications between the Russian ambassador and Moscow. Those communiques reportedly show that the ambassador and then Senator Sessions talked about the Trump campaign, something the Attorney General has denied. This on a day when President Trump, fresh off a shakeup in his communications team, was hoping to shift focus from Russia to things like defense, health care, and taxes. Our Kelly O'Donnell has a story.
With a cinematic flair and military precision, today Marine One landed on the deck of the new $12.9 billion USS Gerald R. Ford, the 45th president there to honor the 38th. And commission an aircraft carrier bearing his name.
May God bless and guide this warship and all who shall sail in her.
There were tributes to those in uniform and a nod to former Vice President Dick Cheney and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Both served under Ford.
They look great. They look great.
Getting down to business, President Trump urged Congress to deliver on higher defense spending, but added another political plug.
By the way, you can also call those senators to make sure you get health care.
Before today's pomp and ceremony, the president launched a Twitter blitz, 10 tweets, from demanding action on health care to attacking Hillary Clinton. He even noted that a president has the complete power to pardon. A power famously exercised by the president Trump honored today.
You grant a full, free, and absolute pardon unto Richard Nixon.
But President Trump insisted the only crime during his administration is leaks against us. Today, his frustration seized on a new intelligence leak involving Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
I did not have communications with the Russians.
The Washington Post reports that U.S. intelligence officials intercepted Russian Ambassador Kislyak telling Moscow he had discussed the Trump campaign with Sessions. A Sessions aide disputed that as wholly uncorroborated and said Sessions stands by his testimony that he never discussed interference with any campaign. The president has publicly described a frayed relationship with Sessions over his recusal overseeing the Russia investigation. But the most visible shakeup happened inside the White House, where a new communications director, Wall Street financier Anthony Scaramucci, is taking over.
And tonight, a new Russia challenge for President Trump. Congressional leaders in both parties announced today an unexpected agreement to vote on a new package of sanctions against Russia, Iran, and North Korea. The president wanted flexibility on Russia sanctions, but Congress intends to limit what he can do. That leaves a choice to sign off on sanctions President Trump does not support or use his veto and suffer the political fallout of appearing too friendly toward Russia. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House. Thank you. Now to California, where 8 large wildfires are still burning tonight. Many people who got caught up in the biggest of them and were forced to leave are now returning home. Some are lucky. Many others, however, are not. We get the latest from NBC's Joe Fryer.
The most destructive wildfire in America this year crept within a mile of the historic California tourist town Mariposa.
It's awful all around.
But when you live here a mile, can feel like mere inches.
When the evacuation notice came up, I couldn't get back home. It just happened so fast.
It was gold that originally lured people here in the 1800s. This week, fire chased them away. The evacuation started days ago as angry, wind-whipped flames moved closer. But Mike Nolan stayed behind, cutting fire lines around his ranch until helicopters and fire trucks showed up.
He is a hero. He is. He saved our home. I don't know what I'd do without him.
Today, when his wife Joanne returned home, it's her worst fears that were extinguished.
I didn't mind seeing all the black because I could see my home.
Others aren't so lucky. The Detweiler fire, its cause still unknown, has now destroyed 60 homes. With 75,000 acres scorched, it's large enough to be spotted from space. But as temperatures cool, crews are making progress. In Mariposa, many are returning home. This gold rush town turned temporary ghost town, slowly coming back to life.
I think everything's getting back to normal as quickly as they can, you know.
Mariposa sits in the shadow of Yosemite National Park, which for now remains fully operational beneath a smoky sky, a reminder of the threat looming across California. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Beyond California, we are following severe weather in parts of the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic tonight. Scenes like this outside Chicago have been hitting the region for days now. Many towns in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois are underwater, and flood warnings continue. Severe thunderstorms are in the forecast again tonight and tomorrow for wide areas of the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and the Northeast. New fallout tonight from the shooting death of an Australian woman by police in Minneapolis. As the victim's family and the public demand details about exactly what led to her death, a shakeup at the police department is triggering calls for even more changes. NBC's Ron Mott has our report tonight.
Chaos.
I hear and understand your objections.
Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges sought to restore confidence in the city's police force hours after the sudden resignation of the department's chief, with protesters urging the mayor be next to go.
We're not going to be tricked by this effort, right? The former chief wasn't doing her job, but we understand it's beyond the chief, that the problem is institutional.
The fiancée of Sydney woman Justine Ruscek-Diamond has fought back tears.
Amid international calls for justice for Justine Damon, shot and killed by police after reporting a possible sexual assault in the alley behind her home, Mayor Hodges announced she asked the police chief to step down.
Bye-bye, Betsy!
The mayor briefly left, returning to say she would not quit her job.
I will not be resigning.
Frustrations here and in the victim's native Australia have only grown since Damon's death last Sunday. After she called 911 twice, two officers responded. The officer in the driver's seat, Matthew Harrity, said he heard a loud sound just as Damon approached his side of the vehicle. He says that is when his partner, Muhammad Noor, opened fire from the passenger seat, killing Damon. Officer Noor has declined to speak to city officials. Both officers have been placed on administrative leave, and questions remain why they had not turned on their body cameras during the incident.
Your power is in your pure awareness.
The 40-year-old spiritual teacher was engaged to be married. Two communities worlds apart now mourning together, demanding to know the truth.
The mayor has said this shooting should not have happened. In the meantime, officials say a bicyclist who was near the scene of this tragic shooting and actually watched as officers tried to perform CPR on Justine Damon is cooperating tonight with authorities. Jose?
Ron Mott in Minneapolis, thank you. There is a new and not so subtle hint about this country's thinking on the North Korea threat and what to do about its leader, Kim Jong-un. It came this week from CIA Director Mike Pompeo. He told the Aspen Security Forum the most dangerous thing about North Korea's nuclear weapons is that Kim Jong-un controls them. And said the most important thing we can do is separate the two. But not everyone shares that view, notably Russia. In Moscow, NBC's Keir Simmons discussed the issue in an exclusive interview with Russia's foreign minister.
Tonight, tension over North Korea's missile program on multiple fronts. The Trump administration preparing to bar American tourists from traveling to that isolated country. The CIA director strongly hinting Washington favors ousting the North Korean dictator, Kim Jong-un. The Russian foreign minister, in an exclusive interview with NBC News, warning America against such action.
We don't believe in regime change anywhere. I hear very enthusiastic voices in the United States, including in some parts of this administration, that the patience has been over and they must do something because the threat is growing and growing and intercontinental ballistic missile was launched. But Secretary Mattis answering a question, bluntly stated that the use of force against North Korean regime would mean a disaster.
And Sergei Lavrov questioning American intervention in Syria. The U.S. should fight ISIS there, he says, but then withdraw.
After the country has been liberated, the presence of the foreign troops or foreign bases on the soil of Syria would be only legitimate with the consent of the Syrians themselves.
Because America has supported Syrian rebels and opposed President Assad, the U.S. presence is illegitimate, Mr. Lavrov says.
To be clear, the principle that the only forces that should be allowed to intervene in Syria are those that have been sanctioned by President Assad would suggest that only Russia, Iran, and perhaps Hezbollah should be allowed to intervene in Syria.
Well, strictly speaking, yes.
So far, a ceasefire in parts of Syria, brokered by the US, Russia, and Jordan, is holding. But it is a tentative truce where hundreds of thousands have died. A country carved up, and Russia and Iran sensing a kind of victory. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Moscow.
And on the Syria issue and the fight against ISIS, Lester Holt discussed it at the same security conference in Aspen with Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence.
Take Syria, for example. Even as you make gains, Syria and Western Iraq, as you make gains against ISIS, is the intelligence community looking forward to, okay, we win here. What's the price of victory? What do we get for it?
These are tough questions. What's happening in Syria right now is just chaos. You've got several actors intersecting with each other. Very difficult to try to project a stabilized future for Syria at this particular point in time.
And you can watch much more of Lester Holt's interview with Dan Coats on our NBC Nightly News Facebook page. This has been a deadly and chaotic week in Venezuela, growing anger and protests there as the country endures its worst economic crisis and the government of President Nicolas Maduro becomes increasingly repressive. Part of the anger is aimed at a plan by Maduro that would give him even more power. On the streets of Venezuela, it's a test of wills that's exploded into chaos. Nearly 100 people have died in recent clashes between security forces and anti-government protesters.
I already lost two friends because in the street. Every time I go into the streets, I'm afraid.
One veteran human rights lawyer says the socialist government's repression of demonstrators is the worst he's ever seen.
In 3 months, there'll be more than 4,000 people arrested. In just 3 months.
On Thursday, at least 2 people were killed during a nationwide anti-government strike. The opposition blocked traffic using whatever they could find, wire, rope, and tree branches. They set fires to trash and cars. But none of that has deterred President Nicolas Maduro. Maduro is moving ahead with a July 30th vote for a special assembly to bypass the opposition-controlled National Assembly and rewrite the Constitution. Critics see this as a blatant power grab, taking power away from the democratically elected Congress. This week, more than 7 million people cast votes in a symbolic referendum to reject Maduro's plan. And President Trump threatened fresh economic sanctions. But Maduro fired back, saying no one gives Venezuela orders, no foreign government today or ever. Meanwhile, Venezuela's economy has been in a tailspin. In a country with the largest oil reserves on earth, basic necessities are almost impossible to find.
My grandmother doesn't have any medicines. We need support from people, from the United States, from the world, to just listen to us and help us, please.
Food is expensive and scarce.
Venezuelan people is queuing to buy a little bag of rice, a little bag of flour, and nothing to eat.
But there is no shortage of frustration, no easy solutions, and no end in sight to the violence. And by the way, what's happening there is having an impact here. The U.S. received more asylum requests from Venezuela than any other country last year, and the number is on track to be even higher this year. Still ahead tonight, one city's bold new approach to fighting and treating the opioid drug epidemic. Is it a model for the entire country? Also, he became the Home Alone dad. Tonight, we remember actor John Hurt and some of his many roles.
You'd be fucked up.
Man.
Like so many cities, Buffalo, New York is struggling with an opioid crisis, losing one person a day to drug overdoses. But a new program there is trying to change that with the country's first opioid court. The idea is to start intervention immediately after users are arrested, getting them treatment inside the justice system. It's part of a growing national experiment. Gabe Gutierrez has details.
All right, how are you feeling today?
Inside this courtroom in Buffalo,
keep up the good work.
Judge Craig Hanna is on a personal mission.
I think our job as a judge is not to hurt people. It's just to make sure they come out of here better than they came in.
He's presiding over the nation's first opioid crisis intervention court of its kind. Unlike typical drug courts, this program gets users into treatment within hours of their arrest, not weeks. It requires detox, strict curfews, and checking in with Judge Hanna every day for a month.
Our main goal is to keep our participants alive.
So far, they've succeeded. Since it kicked off May 1st, none of the nearly 80 participants has overdosed.
For you, this is a life and death struggle. Every day.
Every day. All day, every day.
Ron Woods says his heroin use started with an addiction to painkillers following cancer treatments, and that Judge Hanna helped save his life.
When I found out he was a recovering addict, my whole outlook changed.
That's right. In his younger years, Judge Hanna says he himself abused cocaine and marijuana.
I didn't know I was addicted because it becomes so part or so much of a part of your life.
His program is now funded by a three-year, $300,000 Justice Department grant.
What makes it unique is that it is one of a kind right now. Do I think it can be replicated? Most certainly.
It's part of a growing movement nationwide to come up with new ways to fight the opioid crisis. Eight other states have announced they'll study how to expand treatment within the criminal justice system.
I think the tide is changing in our country that you can't lock away an addict. You have to give treatment.
How important is that personal connection?
I think that's the most important part. They're me. The only difference between myself and one of the participants is time. And what you do at that time in between.
In this court, the defendants aren't the only ones getting credit for time served.
We're always still going to be here for you.
Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Buffalo, New York.
And still to come tonight, we will meet a young man who has overcome life's challenges and found the sweet taste of success. John Hurd has died. The film and TV actor was best known for his role as Peter McAllister, the father in the 1990 hit movie Home Alone and the sequel. He also had roles in such movies as Big and Pelican Brief and on TV in The Sopranos, where his role as a crooked detective earned him an Emmy nomination. Hurd was found in a hotel room in Palo Alto, California, where he was recovering from back surgery. The cause of death has not yet been determined. John Hurd was 71 years old. And a beloved member of the NBC family has died. Jim Vance, who served as an anchor of our NBC station in Washington, D.C. for more than four decades. Vance won 17 Emmy Awards, was inducted into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame in 2007. The president of WRC called him not only the soul of the station, but of the entire Washington area. Jim Vance announced his diagnosis of cancer earlier this year. He was 75 years old. We'll be right back. Finally tonight, we're going to meet a man who's an example of how young adults with special needs can make a transition from school to a productive role in the workforce. He makes jam in Texas. But before you think it's just a little at-home operation, NBC's Joe Lynn Kent tells us it's become a sweet success and a hot one at that.
Nolan Stillwell knows that to make the perfect jam, first you need to pick the perfect pepper. And it helps to have a pepper patch in your backyard.
Okay, Nolan, how about if you pour?
Welcome to the headquarters of Sweet Heat Jam. This commercial kitchen, provided free of charge by a Texas church, is the bustling center of Nolan's jam empire.
We saw early on that Nolan really gravitating toward food, like he liked to cook in the kitchen. He'd be throwing his towel over the shoulder and saying, bam.
Excuse me, bud. We need some measuring stuff here.
Christine Stillwell worried about whether her son Nolan, who has Down syndrome, would be able to find a meaningful job. Yay! So in Sweet Heat Jam, the Stillwells created their own opportunity.
And I think that every parent of a special needs child should never underestimate what their young person can do.
So, Nolan, what's your favorite part about making the jam?
I like it here.
You like it here?
Yeah.
This kitchen?
Yes.
You did this?
Yes.
With 13 flavors, most of them a mix of fruit and Nolan's spicy peppers, business is good. Sweet Heat Jam is selling thousands of jars a year. And Nolan has hired a team, 4 employees and 4 rotating interns, all young adults with disabilities.
How does it make you feel to work at Sweet Heat?
Really happy. Really, they understand our disability.
All right, let's load her up.
Nolan's dad, Randy, helps with deliveries.
So there's our invoice sheet.
To HEB, the largest grocery chain in Texas. Nolan's jam is available in 6 HEB stores.
Which one's this, buddy?
Lucky shoppers can sometimes get a sample from the jam man himself.
So good.
Enjoying the spicy, sweet taste that carries an important message. Jolene Kent, NBC News, Katy, Texas.
And that's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. Tomorrow on Nightly News with Kate Snow, a severe labor shortage on many farms, the impact of immigration policy and politics. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time. Good night.